Catholic Family Podcast presents Lent Around the World, daily traditional Catholic meditations read by our friends from across the globe.
The Passion and Death of Our Lord Jesus Christ by the Most Reverend Alban Goodyear. Part 34, the Fourth Word. Why hast thou forsaken me? There was another reason, besides those we have already given, why the crowd had dwindled away as the hours had drawn on. A strange darkness had come over the sky. The sun had concealed its face. Nature herself had seemed to hide in shame because of what was being done upon the earth. Who did not know the warning of the prophet? Behold, the day of the Lord shall come, a cruel day and full of indignation, and of wrath and of fury, to lay the land desolate, and to destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and their brightness shall not display their light. The sun shall be darkened in his rising, and the moon shall not shine with her light. And I will visit the evils of the world, and against the wicked for their iniquity. And I will make the pride of infidels to cease, and will bring down the arrogance of the mighty. Or the scene portrayed by that other prophet. At their presence the earth hath trembled, the heavens are moved, the sun and moon are darkened, and the stars have withdrawn their shining. And the Lord hath uttered his voice before the face of his army, for his armies are exceeding great, for they are strong and execute his word. For the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can stand it? Still had he concluded with words of hope. Now therefore, saith the Lord, be converted to me with all your heart, in fasting and in weeping and in mourning, and rend your hearts and not your garments, and turn to the Lord your God. For he is gracious and merciful, patient and rich in mercy, and ready to repent of the evil. Who knoweth, but he will return and forgive, and leave a blessing behind him, sacrifice and libation to the Lord your God. But be the cause and significance of this midday darkness what it may, we can see through the gloom and the rest of the crowd already beginning to turn homeward. We can hear what remained of noise and clamor dying away, weakening perhaps even to a dread silence. As the evangelist at a later moment tells us, and all the multitude of them that were come together to that sight and saw the things that were done, returned striking their breasts. There seemed to have been left on the spot few beside the guard and the groups of real sympathizers who, as we have seen, had been permitted now to draw nearer. The city wall behind them shut them off from the busy world. Beyond that wall, a few hundred yards away, there was buying and selling in the bazaar as if nothing unwanted were taking place on the hill of criminal executions. The end was drawing near. Those who knew the signs of death could have no doubt of it. Though the two by his side might linger on, for him, the loss of blood since the agony in Gethsemane, the fasting since the evening before, the unrest of that night, the torture of that day, the tearing of the body at the scourging, the abuse and mauling by the mob, had utterly exhausted his strength, and death could not be far off. Suddenly, in the midst of the silence, Jesus raised his face to heaven and was heard to pray. He spoke this time in Hebrew, the language of the prophets and the Psalms, which perhaps most of those within hearing would not have understood. But they would have guessed, and rightly, that he was taking his prayer from the sacred books. He was using the beginning of the psalm which has already been given, that most vivid foreshadowing, even to details, of all he was now enduring. He spoke in a loud voice, louder than could have been expected from one so near to death. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But clearly, the prayer was more than the mere quoting of a psalm or the fulfillment of a prophecy. It was the full expression of his soul in that open, simple way with which we have long been familiar. In the temple, early in the week, we have heard him cry in a moment of weariness, Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. And previously in Judea, in a similar moment of distress and opposition, he had claimed, "Father, I give thee thanks that thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them to little ones." That we may understand even a little of the meaning of this prayer of Jesus on the cross, it will be well to recall a feature of his life and character which is easily forgotten. Jesus Christ, throughout his life, was what we would call in our human language a lonely man. We need not dwell on the years of his upbringing, when, as is sufficiently clear, this child had no companions of like outlook to his own, nor on the long years at Nazareth, for 30 years are long, after which the best that could be said of him by those who had been most with him was only this: "Is not this the carpenter?" All these years, he had been to them the carpenter, and nothing more. Yet were they the years of youth and early manhood, in which he had grown in wisdom, age, and grace, in which he had looked from the hills across Esdraelon to Samaria, and had dreamed his dreams, and had longed to begin his course. They were the years in which he had longed too, as youth will long, that there might be some in Nazareth with whom he could speak about the great things in his soul. But there had been none. To them he was the carpenter, and that was enough. Indeed, it was reason why he should not be more, so that when at last he revealed himself, they were scandalized because of him, and he could only comment, as one who had long experience of it, that a prophet was not received in his own country. Jesus was a Nazarene. Jesus was only Mary's son. Jesus was the village carpenter. Jesus had no schooling. Jesus could not be of any moment. Such was the reception he met with from those with whom he had lived 30 years. Then the life of Jesus in Nazareth had been a lonely one indeed. In Galilee it had not been much better. Many at first had followed him, but he was not deceived. He had told the crowds that they did not realize who he was that lived among them. Some said he was Elias come back, some that he was a prophet, some that he was John the Baptist risen from the dead. Even when it almost seemed that they might have realized, when they called him the prophet who was to come into the world, they proved that they knew him not, when they would have him proclaimed their king. The sense of lonely disappointment is seldom absent from any page of the Galilean story. It reaches its climax when, after all he had done, he stood in the synagogue at Capernaum and watched the crowds of his hitherto admirers vanish from before him like snow beneath the sun. After this, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. In Jerusalem from the beginning, it had been even worse. Jesus could never have come into the city without feeling that sense of loneliness which studied ignoring and contempt always provides. To those in authority, so far as they could make it so, he was just nothing at all. The more his person became manifest, the more he was treated with contempt. How doth this man know letters, having never learnt? We know this man whence he is, but when the Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Hath any of the rulers believed in him, or of the Pharisees? Search the Scriptures and see that out of Nazareth a prophet riseth not. Do not we say well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? He hath a devil and is mad. Why hear you him? So the effort to suppress him by consistent contempt had gone on whenever he had appeared in Jerusalem. And thus far at least it had succeeded, that if in Galilee he could say he had not where to lay his head, in the holy city it would seem that he never dared spend a night. Even among his own whom he had trained, with whom he had lived night and day, there was always that distance which made him feel his separation. "Do you not yet understand?" he had said to them once on the Lake of Galilee. How often he had blamed them for their lack of faith, for their presumption, for their misinterpretation of his words. Sometimes there is almost visible in his soul a struggle between love longing for their friendship and love falling back upon itself disappointed. Even at the supper he had been compelled to say, "How long a time have I been with you, and you have not known me?" Which was followed in an hour by the lonely appeal, "Stay you here and watch with me. Could you not watch 1 hour with me? Nor can it be said that in all this Jesus was above the sense of loneliness felt by ordinary men. Like other men, he was hurt by desertion, by slander, by ingratitude, by failure, by treachery, by any of those things which set a man alone, looking for one to grieve together with him, and there is none. He seldom complained, yet when this lot befell him, he allowed himself to speak. When the crowd deserted him in Capernaum, he turned to his own and asked, "Will you also go away?" And we can easily catch the tone in which the words were uttered. When men found fault with his companionship, he asked, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, 'Behold, a glutton and a drinker of wine.'" When he had healed 10 together, and only one thought to thank him, he inquired, "Were not the 10 made clean? And where are the 9? In the supper room the night before, we remember the note on which the discourse of love almost ended. "Behold, the hour cometh, and it is now come, that you shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone." Indeed, so constant is this sense of loneliness, of disappointment, of separation, that St. John does not hesitate to make it the background of his gospel, while the others fall back upon it as a characteristic which stands out like a mountain from the plain. "He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not." So says St. John, and St. Matthew and St. Luke echo it in the cry of pain, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered together thy children, as the hen doth gather her chickens under her wings, and thou wouldst not." And yet, through all this disappointment and loneliness, there was one consolation on which he could always rely. If St. John is the evangelist of the rejection of Christ, he is also the evangelist of the fatherhood. If he repeats the lesson of man's ingratitude, still, 116 times the Father's name is repeated as the one support against every failure. And St. Matthew, in this point at least, most akin to St. John, puts the Father over 40 times on the lips of Jesus, his constant and abiding companion when all else left him. "Father, I give thee thanks. Father, save me from this hour. Father, the hour is come. Father, if it be possible, I and the Father are one. I am not alone, the Father is with me." So throughout the whole story of his life do we find him falling back on this union with the Father. He had reason to be sad, but this certainty that such was the will of the Father, that the Father saw all, that the Father, seeing all, could nevertheless forgive and restore all in him, was the prayer that had always held him up and made him go on giving, even to this last moment. But now, for a moment at least, even this support is taken from him. The night before, at the gate of the garden, with the howling persecutors confronting him, he had said, "The chalice which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink it?" Now we learn what the dregs of that chalice contained. Other things he had endured since the agony, and had uttered not a word of complaint. Judas had betrayed him, and he had responded with a question only. The mob had laid hands on him, and he had contented himself with the same. A question, again, was all he gave to the soldier who struck him in the face. Peter denied him, and he looked on him, and nothing more. Annas, Caiaphas, Pilate had consciously maligned him. He had been stabbed in the back, he had been stabbed through the heart, and there had been no word of complaint. There had been only an unflinching assertion of the truth. Physical suffering he had endured in plenty. In that moment it racked his torn body from head to foot. But the man of sorrows, the friend of the blind and the maimed, who had invited sufferers to come to him and he would refresh them, was not one to shrink from physical pain. There was an agony far worse than pain, one which, had we not his own word for it, we might have judged to have been impossible. It had been anticipated in part in the garden, where he had identified himself with the sinner, where he had been made sin, as St. Paul boldly puts it. But even there, he had been able to appeal to the Father for relief. Now he is permitted to feel the worst consequences of that identification, the agony of hell itself. Jesus Christ is permitted to endure the sense of separation from, abandonment by, the Father. It is no longer, "Father, if it be possible," it is, "My God, why hast thou forsaken me? My God, why hast thou deserted me?" He has carried man's griefs to the last degree. He has drunk the cup of man's miseries to the dregs. He has allowed himself to know by experience all that man endures, even that greatest distress, that dark night of the soul, which few souls of prayer escape, but which is known at its worst only by those who have come to the closest union with him. At other times in his life, on 50 occasions and more, we have seen him the man of prayer. Now, at this last moment, he hangs before us, the model of the desolate, who in the days of his flesh, with a strong cry and tears, offering up prayers and supplications to him that was able to save him from death, was heard for his reverence. And whereas indeed he was the Son of God, he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And being consummated, he became to all that obey him the cause of eternal salvation, called by God a high priest, according to the order of Melchizedek.